The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Gatiss and Judge Sleater, the Honorable Theodora Gatiss presiding.
Good morning. We are here for an argument in one case this morning on the Zoom platform. The case number is A230264, Eric Peterson, appellant versus A.L. Brown, respondent, and Capital City Law Group LLC, respondent. And good morning to you, Mr. Johnson. You have probably noticed that we are two instead of three judges this morning. The third member of our panel is Judge Jill Hallbrooks, due to an unexpected circumstance. She's unable to join us for the argument this morning. However, a recording is being made of this argument, and Judge Hallbrooks will review the argument and will be participating in the panel's decision. Additionally, I'll just note that we have counsel for the appellant, Mr. Johnson, here. Counsel for the respondents have elected not to participate in this oral argument. And so, Mr. Johnson, you will have 15 minutes to present your argument. Yours will be the only argument that is heard this morning, and following your argument, the case will be submitted to us, to the court, to render a decision. We are on Zoom. Just a few notes about that before I turn things over to you. Can you see the clock in the corner of the screen?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So that will be keeping track of your time. I ask you to please be mindful of the amount of time that you have to present your argument. And I don't expect that we'll have any technology complications, but if someone accidentally drops off of the argument, we will stop and then make sure that we can all be here before we resume with the arguments. That ends the comments that I have this morning. I will turn things over to you now, Mr. Johnson. You may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Keith Johnson, and I'm representing Eric Peterson in this legal malpractice claim against attorney A.L. Brown and his law firm, Capital City Law Group. The issue being presented to this court in this legal malpractice case is whether Eric Peterson timely served his expert affidavit pursuant to MnStat section 544.42, subdivision 2, paren 2. We are relying on
Mr.
the rules.
Johnson, can I interrupt you? I'm sorry, before you get into the merits, and I know that that was one of the issues argued to the district court, but what do we do with the absence of an explanation from the district court on the basis for the granting of summary judgment? Obviously, you were about to hit one of the issues that we assume because it was argued that the judge at least considered, but normally we look at the analysis the judge used as part of our appellate review. What do you say we should do in the absence of that, or do we just assume where you're starting is where the judge started and perhaps ended versus getting to the merits of the expert affidavit?
I don't know how I can respond to that, Judge. I don't know. I can't give an, I've been practicing over 40 years. I can't give, I, first time I've received an order that didn't have any memorandum or reasoning accompanying it. So I don't know how to respond to that, Your Honor.
And just to clarify, neither counsel followed up. In other words, you didn't, or respondents didn't, with the judge to supplement or to ask for it.
We didn't, Your Honor. We didn't. I mean, the case was argued to Judge Mulrooney on a December 5th, and the decision was made. I'm sorry. I mean, it was argued on December 15th, and the decision was made four days later without any reasoning or supporting memorandum. So we appealed from that. And I guess I can't explain Judge Mulrooney's reasoning without getting the reasoning directly from him.
Well, thank you for your attempt, at least, because that was obviously a question I have, and I'm assuming all on the panel have that same as well.
Right. What we did in this case, I want to discuss the procedural posture first with the court. We commenced this action by a complaint. And Attorney Brown served a motion for a more definite statement. So on August 13th, we served an amended complaint. Now on August 25th, Judge Awesome, who was handling this case at that time, issued his scheduling order. So we received a scheduling order from the court. And under that scheduling order, the judge set a deadline for us to provide the affidavit pursuant to Statement 544.42 subdivision 2, parent 2, it's the major affidavit, by December 7th. So that was the order from the court. On August 27th, Attorney Brown served a motion, a Rule 12 motion to dismiss. And he scheduled the hearing for January 6th. The parties did not engage in a settlement conference. And on September 10th, but on September 10th, we served discovery and we attempted to schedule Mr. Brown's deposition. Now, that basically wasn't properly replied
Mr.
to.
Mr. Johnson, when you served discovery, do you agree that you commenced discovery?
No, Your Honor, because I don't believe we commence discovery until an answer is served in the case. That is the law that was established by the Ferkus v. Harms case, that the time period to commence the 180-day period does not commence to run until the initial answer is served. No initial answer was served in this case until Judge Awesome denied what was turned into a summary judgment motion by Mr. Brown. Under the case of Ferkus v. Harms, the 180-day period would have commenced 30 days after Mr. Brown served his answer.
Mr. Johnson, though, I was anxious to hear your answer to Judge Gaeta's question. I don't know that that's the answer, is it? Because the Ferkus case, there was no discovery commenced. And so the court used the phrase when it should have been the conference and discovery, et cetera. But here you commenced discovery, did you not, by the service of the interrogatories?
I would agree that we commenced discovery. I mean, obviously, we served discovery at that point in time. At that point, Mr. Brown had obligations to respond to the discovery and he didn't. And because of that, we agreed with Mr. Brown to enter into a stipulation to extend the scheduling order. So that,
but did you actually ever enter into a stipulation to extend the deadline for the expert witness disclosure in this case?
We didn't go that far with the stipulated order, Your Honor. What we did was we just basically requested the court to make a determination on this issue at the June 6th hearing, which turned out to be a hearing on the summary judgment motion, when no discovery had been provided to date. Now, we didn't address that issue with a motion hearing. We awaited the order from Judge Awesome. The order came down, and at the time that order came down, he indicated that an answer had to be served. It's our position that when the answer was served, the time period to serve the expert affidavit would have been 180 days from 30 days after the answer was served.
What is your authority for the proposition that the service of the answer commences discovery? I mean, aside from the Firkus case, which I think Judge Slater pointed out is different than the situation here, what authority do you have for that?
Your Honor, I think we're relying solely on the Firkus case and the fact that the statute itself refers to the initial answer as being the moment when you can finally calculate the time period for service of the expert affidavit. The Firkus case was decided by the legislature at the same time. It's set forth in the Firkus case that the statutory language of the legal malpractice statute regarding service of the expert affidavit and the medical malpractice statute regarding service of the expert affidavit were basically passed by the legislature at the same time. They determined that the phrase commencement of discovery means the latest day discovery commences under the statute, which is 30 days after the initial due date of the answer.
So is it your position that when a party serves discovery requests on the other party, that is not the equivalent of commencing discovery?
Your Honor, if the discovery would have been responded to, we could have presented the expert affidavit pursuant to the scheduling order that Judge Awesome had already issued by December 7th. The record reflects that Attorney Brown refused to disclose discovery, refused to be deposed. And then he turns the Rule 12 motion into a summary judgment motion. That we're submitting to the court was improper. I'm submitting to the court it was to deal with it. It was insufferable. And we had to work from there. And so we opposed the motion, successfully opposed the motion, and finally got the order from Judge Awesome requiring him to serve the answer.
But Mr. Johnson, just to clarify, though, at no time did you bring a motion to compel an answer to the discovery. And I'm assuming that would have been the time for you to argue as part of your remedy for that. We would wish for a delay in providing the expert affidavit. But there was just silence on it, or at least the record's silent.
Your Honor, in lieu of bringing a motion to compel, we entered the stipulation to amend the scheduling order. So basically what we were doing was requesting the court to
I thought you said there was no stipulation. There was maybe some discussion about a stipulation, but that no stipulation was entered before the district court.
Your Honor, we entered into a stipulation agreeing to amend the scheduling order on November 11th of 2021, and the court issued an amended scheduling order on November 30th of 2021. And I will just mention to the court that 544.42 subdivision 4B allows the parties to extend the time for disclosure of the expert affidavit. And that's what the parties did in this case. Now, what we didn't do was address the issue on June 6th at the hearing, but the court nevertheless proceeded with denying the summary judgment motion and ordering an answer. So we are relying on the interpretation set forth in Firkus. They didn't do a discovery conference then, In that case, the eventual service of the expert affidavit was more than 180 days after the initial answer was made. In this case,
can I just go back to the order from the district court regarding the alleged stipulation here? When I look at that order, I'm not seeing that the deadlines were actually extended. What I'm seeing is that there was a wish to maybe do so that would be discussed at some future point in time. So I find that confusing and also difficult to interpret as an actual, you know, extension of the deadline.
Your Honor, the long and the short of it is that because the Rule 12 motion was served, there was no initial answer served. Now, before service of the initial answer, parties were not required to conduct a discovery conference, even though discovery had been served. That's the rule. In the 180 time period did not commence under 544.42 subdivision 2 paren 2. That only occurred at the time that the initial answer was made. So the fact that we didn't address that issue at the time, nevertheless, it became apparent that when the summary judgment motion was denied by Judge Awesome, that and he required at that time Attorney Brown to serve an answer, that would have been the date that the time period commenced 30 days after that. I guess that's what we relied on, Your Honor. I think because of the unique situation where he turns a Rule 12 motion into a summary judgment motion without complying with discovery, refusing to give his deposition before the summary judgment motion occurred, would back up our argument that it was totally appropriate to rely on the Furtus case for that and rely on that to make our determination for the time period that this commenced. So we're requesting the court basically to reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument this morning. The case is submitted. And as I mentioned at the outset here, Judge Hallbrooks will be reviewing the video of the argument and will be participating in the panel's decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
That will also end our Zoom session this morning. At this point, we will exit the Zoom application. Thanks, everyone.